This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello and welcome to this edition of LabCast. I'm Kevin Kane, and this week I'm joined by Lincoln Murphy, a conversion rate optimization expert who also runs a very successful blog called 16 Ventures. Lincoln joins me today to talk about SaaS churn rates. Hey Lincoln, thanks so much for joining me today on LabCast. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. I'm excited to talk to you about this churn.
Yeah, so why don't we start with a really easy question, and can you just define for our listeners what SaaS churn actually is?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I look at it is, I mean, at its core, churn is the number of customers that leave, or the number or the amount of revenue that leaves. And see, right there is kind of the problem. People don't really look at churn the same way across the board. So, you know, it's the number of customers that leave in some time frame, or it's the amount of revenue that you lose in some time frame. You know, it could be month, could be year, could be on a cohort basis, which is a whole different discussion. So, you know, to answer your question, churn is what you perceive it to be in your organization.
So, presumably, you know, if you're an expansion stage SaaS company, you're almost invariably going to have some level of churn. It seems like it'd be pretty hard to avoid. Is there a certain churn rate which is acceptable, or a milestone that you would hit where you realize that you have a problem?
It's interesting. I mean, I was just at an event where we had last week on about customer success, and there was a panel of VCs, and it came out that really VCs looking at, again, sort of expansion stage B2B enterprise SaaS companies are looking at 95% annual retention customer wise, and they're looking at 110% retention revenue wise. So that was an interesting metric to throw out there, and what that means is that they don't really care if you lose customers during the year, but they want you to actually grow revenue. So this is things I've talked about before. David Skok has talked about, expansion revenue. This idea, negative churn is another way of looking at it. It's this idea that, you know, customers can leave, but as long as your revenue is going up, you're probably going to be okay, because those customers that we're churning out, aren't necessarily the high value customers that you really want at the end of the day. Now, do those metrics sort of apply to line of business or departmental or SMB SaaS applications? I would say probably not. And do they apply to B2C? Probably not. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't still shoot for low customer churn or high retention. Again, however, you know, glass half full, half empty kind of thing. Or that you shouldn't shoot for expansion revenue. It just means that those benchmarks are put out there by companies that are investing in B2B enterprise type SaaS plays that are, you know, still they're more akin to enterprise software plays in the olden days. You know, they're still multi-year contracts or things like that, big dollar deals. These might not apply to the $20 a month line of business apps that maybe a lot of your listeners are building.
Right. So it sort of sounds like there's a certain part of rationalization around this, and a certain part of sort of PR spin that you try to make something that maybe isn't good look better than it really is by taking a different slice at it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was that book, how to lie with statistics or something like that, right? I mean, it's the thing of it is, the bottom line is you just make sure that you and all the other stakeholders within your organization, whether that's investors, your employees or your leadership, or your wife, if you're sitting at home going over the stuff with her, you know, I mean, make sure you're all sort of on the same page, right? That you're looking at the same metrics at the same time frame, so that you're doing that apples to apples comparison. To sort of continue with the question that you asked before, is there a benchmark or is there something you should look for? I like to say it like this: anything that you're in control of should, in terms of churn, should be as low as possible. Or if you, again, retention, if you want to look at it that way, should be as high as possible. What I mean is that there's going to be market specific things. There's going to be things that are going on in your world. Maybe if you're a B2C company, you're doing games, things like that. You're probably going to have short customer lifetimes. You're going to have, you know, high churn, high turnover. That's just what you have to deal with. So what you have to say is, okay, that's the way the market is. But I'm going to do everything in my power to keep, or to take the things that are in my power and make those as positive as possible. So, you know, I don't like to just take those market or these ideas that, you know, this particular market has a high churn rate and say, well, that's then that's okay that my company has a high churn rate with our customers. I say, okay, we take that input from the market and we do whatever we can, you know, to keep that churn rate as low as possible. So whatever you're in control of. So, you know, the VCs will like to say, you know, death and divorce are really the only two reasons why churn is acceptable. So if your company, if your customer's company goes out of business, or if they get acquired, those are really the only two reasons why churn is acceptable. And I say that's a great way to look at it. What it really should say is just anything that is out of your control is sort of quote unquote acceptable. And then we should be doing everything we can with the stuff that we do have control over.
Well, so two questions out of that. One is sort of going back to what you had said earlier. I'm curious to know, you know, there are these industry type causes, it sounds like, that are responsible for churn. So maybe it's the nature of the business that you're in to a certain extent. But what are some of the other causes that are really responsible for this that companies should be worrying about and trying to fix?
Yeah, so most of the time what I look for is engagement with your customer. If there's a lack of engagement, I can almost guarantee that's the reason for your whatever your churn rate is. And generally, you know, you have to understand that companies that come to me generally have an issue with churn, right? So I see companies with just incredibly unacceptable churn rates. And we can almost always pinpoint that to, you know, some level of a lack of engagement. Now, engagement is a funny metric, and if you want to look at it that way, because it doesn't really mean anything across the board. It really varies company to company. The way I sort of look at it is it's when somebody's getting value from your offering. So again, it's a little bit, you know, what does that actually mean? Well, it depends on what your offering is, and it depends on your customers. And, you know, it's something we have to sort of figure out by knowing your customers, knowing your product, and saying, okay, this is what we think engagement would be for them. And then we can sort of measure that. Now, you know, that's measuring how the great thing about SaaS is that you can actually have some level of visibility into what people are doing within your application. So you can sort of, you can start to tie that engagement to actual activity within the product. It's activity. It's also, you know, things like, take an email marketing product. If people are sending a lot of emails and they're getting a lot of unsubscribes and they're getting a lot of bounces and they're not getting a lot of click-throughs and not getting a lot of open rate or getting a very high open rate, that could start to lead to some level of disengagement, right? Because you're not having that positive experience.
Sure.
So you as the vendor need to kind of figure out, how do we fix that? You know, what can we do? So, you know, I've said things on my blog on 16ventures.com, you know, if you send out a report that says, here's your results from this campaign or whatever, maybe include a link in there that says, then this is how to fix it. You know, this is how to get better results, right? It's little things like that. So a lack of engagement can be both just people aren't using your product or they stop using it. It can be that they're just not getting the results that they should be getting. But engagement is basically where people are getting value from your product. So when somebody says, hey, I have a really high churn rate, we'll start digging in through the data and we'll see that, you know, people either aren't getting started using the product, so it's, you know, sort of an onboarding, it's an early stage engagement issue, or just over time they start to lose that engagement with the customer, and that basically it's the customer has stopped getting value. So usually that it's an engagement issue. On the flip side, you know, I say this all the time, the seeds of churn are planted early. And what I mean by that is, like, literally even during the sales process, you could be selling people a bill of goods that you can't deliver, right? And so, you know, if you get to a point where you've basically said, you know, one company I worked with was a sort of a done for you email marketing product. They would write, you know, they would write the copy for you and do all this other stuff. And they basically said, we send an email, you make money, right? Well, that was in the very early days. And it turns out, you know, that they weren't able to deliver on that. And so people were leaving because they weren't getting what was promised of them. So, you know, if you're mismanaging expectations in the sales process, you could have people be, you could be causing people to leave, you know, maybe not, you know, immediately, but 3 months down the line, 6 months down the line, they're not getting the value that you promised them, they're going to leave. So when I look for these triggers of churn, I think companies are often surprised when I start, you know, saying, okay, let's go through your sales process. It's like, well, wait, churn is an end of life issue, with a customer, but that's not the reality. The reality is it can be started. Those seeds could be planted at any point and, often are planted very early.
You know, another thing that you mentioned in your blog is sort of the importance of attracting better customers. And you had said previously, you know, that you you may see a high turnover rate initially, a high churn rate, because you don't necessarily have the best customers. So, you know, how do you attract better customers? And does it mean that, you know, when you're a new company, you're starting out, it is okay to have a certain amount of churn?
Yeah, I mean, I think for very early stage companies, churn is, it's hard to say whether or not that's a metric you should really even be worried about. I mean, I think if you have a lot, if you have a high churn rate at first, you know, it's probably indicative of a lot of the similar things that we've talked about, but it could also mean that your product isn't complete. You know, I encourage anybody in the early stages, you know, to do customer development. It's, you know, basically always talking to your customers. And so when somebody leaves in the early stages, I mean, you're probably not something like, you know, you probably don't have a million users all leaving. You know, you could probably pick up the phone and call somebody, probably send an email and just say, hey, what happened? Why'd you leave? You know, I mean, in the early stages, that's what I would suggest doing. You know, never stop talking to your customers, even when they leave. Because people, if you give them permission, are often very willing to tell you what's going on, especially if it was a paying customer who left. So that's why I also encourage you in the early days to start charging money for your product. You know, assuming you're not going down this other type of path of freemium and trying to build a massive audience and a, you know, free audience, and you'll let somebody else monetize. If you're just going out there to make to build a product and build a predictable revenue stream, you know, then I suggest charging quickly, because the type of feedback you get from paying customers is so very different from that of free or beta or whatever. So somebody who's been paying you for, you know, a few months and then decides to stop paying you, man, that if you give them permission, they're probably going to give you some amazing feedback. It also means putting your ego aside, right? And saying, I'm willing to do this for the betterment of the venture here, to go listen to, you know, why we failed a customer. So, I mean, you know, the main thing is that, you know, in the early days, churn, again, it may or may not be that big of a deal to really worry about. Certainly as you know, maybe after you reach product market fit, you know, that's a great way of saying, okay, we've gotten to a point where, you know, our customers like us. You know, Sean Ellis says 40% of your customers would be upset if your product went away. You know, I just tweeted on Twitter. My handle is at Lincoln Murphy. I just said, you know, unplug your product, unplug your service for 20 minutes on Monday morning, and you'll know whether or not you've reached product market fit. Don't probably do that, but you know, it's one of those things where if you get to a point where a large portion of your audience would, or your in this case your customers would say, yeah, we'd be upset if your product went away, then you've gotten to that point where you've reached product market fit, and that's probably also the point where you can start, where churn really starts to matter, because you've reached a maturity level where you're attracting customers, you know, because of your efforts, not in spite of your efforts. You have a product that is, you know, has at least the minimum feature set and functionality that isn't just MVP, isn't just the minimum viable product to go to market and start getting feedback, but it's a real product now. And, you know, now you have now you're at a point where you can start sort of stepping on the gas and growing. And this is also where churn is going to start to affect whether or not you grow fast enough, right? Because it's harder to, you can be attracting customers in the front door, but again, you know, if a lot of them are falling out the back door, it's going to be hard to really grow at any predictable level.
Are there any other tactics that you would recommend for dealing with churn once you get past that early stage and you are an expansion stage company, you're really growing, and you don't have that same sort of ability to email the individual customer and necessarily get the deeper dive on why they've left you?
Sure. I mean, so again, engagement. So knowing your customer, knowing what value, how they're going to actually get value from your product, knowing what engagement looks like for them. So I sit down with my clients and we'll do a customer success map. And what that means is very simple. What does success mean to the customer? How are they going to be successful with our product? And what does that look like at the various stages of the customer lifetime? It's very simple to say, you know, when they first come in for the free trial, they need to do this, this, and this, and then they will realize value from our product and they'll probably convert. I say that simple. Most companies, at least the ones that I work with or even interact with, still aren't even doing that. But it's easy to do that for the free trial. It's easy to do that, let's say, you know, to map out what it's going to be like in the first few months as a customer. But few companies really sort of take that and say, you know, what's our customer going to need to continue to realize value after they've been a customer for 6 months, for 12 months, for 24 months? If you sit down with your business plan or you sit down with your investors or whoever and you say our estimated customer lifetime is going to be 3 years, then you better have some idea of what it's going to look like at from a customer perspective when they're using your product going into month 36 or 37.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
But most companies, especially obviously early stage that haven't gotten there yet, don't really know what that looks like. And I would say companies that have been around long enough to have customers stay even 3 years still don't know why those customers have stayed for 3 years. So tactics, you know, even though you might not be able to talk to every customer, maybe you can still continue to talk to some customers, right? And, you know, this is where I go back to sort of who's your ideal customer. And that's the blog that we put up on an OpenView Venture Partners blog that you guys sort of reposted for me. You know, and it was basically this question of who's your ideal customer, right? And that's such an important question. But I think a lot of times it's a little bit off-putting because it's sort of like, well, wait a minute, I don't have just one ideal customer. You know, I don't want to miss out on any opportunities. And the reason I say it like that, who's your ideal customer, is because out of everybody that you could possibly serve with your offering, there's probably one that is really ideal. It doesn't mean that you're not going to serve or even go after, you know, explicitly three or four other types of customers. It just means that there's probably one that would really benefit from your offering, where the sales cycle is going to be, you know, maybe shorter, they're maybe going to have less interaction or require less interaction with your support team. You know, they're going to be more profitable, right? Whatever the criteria is for your ideal customer, there's probably one that really is out there. And the reason that I'm so adamant about figuring that out is because, especially at first, it's going to allow you to focus. You know, right now, if you're in an early stage company, you're probably more focused on your product, you're more focused sort of inward. And if you can focus on a customer, it's going to help you with a lot of things, including this customer success map. If you're just sort of product centric, function centric, you're not going to really take into consideration how a actual type of user out there at an actual company, you know, would come into the product. You might be, you know, almost developing in a vacuum, and of course that goes against everything that we know to be the appropriate way. But it's so, you know, we just, that's the way we, I think, as humans, we have a tendency to want to, you know, not go out and get the right feedback or not interact with our customers, not ask the hard questions, those kinds of things. So, you know, knowing your customer is absolutely critical, because it doesn't just sort of help you market your product or help you advertise it or whatever, or write, you know, good inbound marketing copy. It really drives the overall, should drive the overall product design. You know, I'm a big proponent of the, if you go back to what marketing is, right, it includes product. So with SaaS, I mean, I think the product, the service, really, I still say product, but it's really a service, you know, is as much a part of the sales and marketing process as, you know, an ad creative that you might put out there. So you kind of have to, it's all sort of commingled together, it should be. And, you know, your product should work to not only sell itself, should be designed to get people to, you know, get on board, become engaged, become so invested that converting to a paying customer is just the, you know, is a no-brainer. And then it should work to keep them invested and keep them engaged. And, You know, so knowing your customer, going back, so the tactics that you could use all stem from knowing your customer. This could be things like, you know, really enabling them at the appropriate time to share within their organization. But again, you know, social capital within, especially within a B2B environment is very precious. So you have to make sure you ask them to share at the right time and do it in the right way. This isn't like import your Outlook contact list. This is, you know, sort of being creative and thinking about it from the customer perspective. When would it make sense for them to share? And once they do that, you know, then you can start sort of building that internal virality within an organization. Or, you know, maybe this is one of those ideas that's been around forever, but, you know, more and more SaaS companies are starting to realize how important this is. You know, creating certification programs. So things outside of the app, right? It's like if you can create certified users within your organization, that gets your product or the organization of the customer, that gets your product even more ingrained into the culture of your customer, so that, you know, if your product champion leaves, which is often, you know, it can be a big trigger for churn, you know, you have other people within the organization that are also invested in your product, and you're more likely to stay. And by the way, when the certified person from company A leaves and goes to company B, do you think that certified person with your product is also going to try to bring your product into that new company? Most likely, right? So not only, so there's a little bit of viral expansion that isn't, you know, sort of push a button and share with your friends. So.
Well, I really appreciate that explanation, Lincoln. I appreciate your being with me today here on LabCast. You'd mentioned your Twitter handle and your blog. Are there any other ways that people can get in touch with you?
Those are the main ways. 16ventures.com. That's where I post all sorts of stuff. It's kind of like therapy for me. Twitter at Lincoln Murphy. Those are the main ways. And all my other contact information is available on those channels.
Great. Well, thanks again for being with me today, Lincoln. Really appreciate your time and look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely. Take care.